Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 111, How Jonathan Became a Wargamer. So I want to welcome everyone to this episode of Wargaming Recon. If you are a new listener, I hope you will enjoy what you hear and that you will come back for many more episodes down the road. And if you're a longtime listener, you know the deal, you know what we do, and you must like it because you're here yet again listening to another episode of Wargaming Recon. I've gotten in the habit of late to try to do a mailbag segment at the end of each episode, whenever there's an email that comes in, or maybe something's going on our Facebook page, or any of our social media that there's interaction from any of you with me, which I love to get, by the way, but any interaction from you guys or ladies with me, I try to pick through, and some of that ends up in a mailbag section. So one of the listeners, one of you guys, listener Andrew, had posted on our Facebook page a little while ago, and he had a question for us. So that made its way into the mailbag section of episode, I think it was 109, the TotalCon 2014 episode. And at the end of that episode, I read his question and then addressed it a little bit. And I'm going to read his question again because his feedback, his mail, so to speak, is the reason and purpose of this episode. He asks a question, and to respond to it, I had to do a whole episode. So his question is kind of an show topic idea, I guess you could say. So he had said on our Facebook page, quote, I dabbled in Games Workshop as a teenager, but was turned off from the hobby by all of the cheating and arguments. Then university friends got me addicted to Full Thrust, a spaceship war game. Since then, I moved into DBA and heavily into Flames of War. I've dabbled in a lot of rules and periods, but I prefer rules that are fast yet realistic. How did you get into wargaming? So, Andrew, first of all, I want to thank you again for getting in touch with us and sending your feedback and asking that question. I know I already thanked you for that on episode, I think it was 109. But, like I said, your question is the purpose for this whole episode. So, let's kind of dig in the beginning, and we're going to go chronologically. So, I kind of talked a little bit about this on a guest appearance I did way back in 2010. I had an appearance on the Stone Ape podcast. I believe it was episode 19. Don't worry, there'll be a link to the show in the show notes to that. A link to a lot of the things that we cover. So you're going to want to remember to head on over to wargamingforums.com/WR111. That's wargamingforums.com/WR111. The number is 111. You do that, you'll get links and information to all sorts of stuff. So on that guest appearance, I appeared on a show called Stone Ape. It was a Stone Ape podcast run by a Mr. Tom Barbalay. Tom had been a listener in the early days of what is now Wargaming Recon, and he liked what he heard, and we kind of communicated a little bit, and he invited me on his show. The name of that episode is called New England Gaming Vegas with Jonathan Reinhardt. And in it, I talked about a bunch of things. He and I both kind of talked, and he, of course, introduced me, talked about wargaming, talked about the history of what I was doing. At the time, it was called the CWF Gamecast, and then talked about just my life and Flames of War and all sorts of different things. And, of course, on there, it's part of it. I talked a little bit about my history of wargaming. I don't expect that many or even any of you will have listened to that episode. Maybe you will now. Keep in mind, Stone Ape is a different type of show than what we do here at Wargaming Recon. So if you want to check it out, great. If not, that's okay. Doesn't matter. Going to get into it and much more here on the show. So my experience with wargaming kind of depends on what you consider wargaming. We had done a show in 2013 here, an episode of Wargaming Recon. I think it was number 102. It's called An Academic Study of Wargamers. I had two guests on, Ian Cross and our buddy and friend of the show and frequent guest, Aaron Boston. And now he's friend with Ian Cross. And Ian is an amazing guy who, for his thesis, really, for when he was graduating from William & Mary College in the U.S., he did this study of wargamers and what games they play and all sorts of stuff. So we talked about it in that episode. And in the episode, it was really interesting because his study focused heavily on things that may not be considered wargaming by a lot of people. And probably because a lot of the people who I interact with now are historical wargamers. A lot of the games that were covered in the study were things produced by Games Workshop. A lot of sci-fi fantasy minis games and stuff. And at its root, wargaming is a game that depicts war. And that's a very broad definition, but one that I don't normally use, and yet am going to go with for this episode. Mainly because when Andrew sent his feedback and said, how did you get into wargaming? He's basically asking, what is your history with gaming? And what is your past like? And how did you get into this? And why should we listen to you? Why should we listen to what's on Wargaming Recon? So in order for me to kind of do that and to cover everything, I need to look at it broadly, and then I can drill down into more narrow, precise areas as the cases come up. So way, way back when I was just a wee lad in fourth or fifth grade, something like that, I started getting into a game called Magic the Gathering. I was playing at about the time that Unlimited and Limited editions were out. Magic the Gathering, for those who don't know, is a hugely popular collectible card game. You buy a starter deck that has stuff that you need to play, and then you can buy booster packs that have a smaller number of cards. You don't know what you're going to get in them, and so you need to buy more and more and more of them to get all the stuff you want. And since everything is so random, the different cards have different value because of how rare they are and other features, like they might be shinier or do special things, that kind of stuff. So I got into it, of course, as a fourth or fifth grader. I wasn't even in my teens then, and I didn't really understand it other than I liked the artwork. I thought it was kind of cool, and I just wanted to have this stuff, so I would get it, and then I'd play with friends, and did that sort of thing. And then as time moved on, I got, you know, even further into elementary school, and then into middle school, I started playing games like HeroQuest. Now, I agree with you, Magic the Gathering, probably not a war game by any stretch of the imagination, but HeroQuest, although more of a role-playing game with minis, helps to kind of bridge the gap. And it's interesting because it sets up some of my later wargaming, although at the time I wouldn't have recognized it. HeroQuest, put up by Milton Bradley. It's an old school game now, not like an old school game that like grognards play, but it's for someone my age right now. This is 2014 and I'm in my early 30s, but someone in my generation playing HeroQuest, it's an old game, and trying to find a copy nowadays, at least one in decent condition, a few hundred bucks. Luckily, I have that and some expansions. Anyway, that doesn't matter, and you guys don't care, which I don't blame you. But HeroQuest kind of got me into it more, and it also opened up the realm for things like D&D, and I never played D&D until much, much later in my gaming career. But into that whole imagination, creativity, science fiction, fantasy thing, where you would have a character that you could identify with, and they would get to do things and explore and battle stuff, and you'd roll dice, and it was a different way for me for rolling dice, because as a younger kid, I played all the classic family board games, things like Clue and Sorry, because I was thinking of when you get to Go on Sorry, you get to scoot along and bump the people off, but those kind of games. And I played chess as a kid. I was definitely in first and second grade and third grade. I played a lot of chess and cribbage and stuff like that. So I played all those sorts of games and poker and like all that kind of stuff. And great times playing with family members. So it's not the same as what you would play as a grown up, but they didn't just let me win because I was a kid. So it was good to learn that, but I played all that sort of stuff. And for me, rolling dice was different back then than what it would be playing a game like HeroQuest to inflict damage on an opponent, like a made up creature. It didn't matter. I was trying to do something and wage combat and conduct war, albeit on a smaller scale. And I'm sure some of you play skirmish war games, whether you are playing a skirmish game and that you have a squad of guys and you're commanding them, or a group of squads, or you're responsible for an individual figure. But in that regard, it's similar to HeroQuest because you have to learn how to scale the combat down and how to react in that kind of way. And then also how to work with others. So I had some experience playing HeroQuest. Not a lot, but some, and I liked it and learned more and more. And then by the time I was definitely more into middle school, I played things like Axis and Allies, the original one before they changed all of it nowadays. Feudal, which you may not have heard, it's by Avalon Hill. Feudal takes chess and kind of puts it on its head, really. So it combines the core of chess, which is medieval combat, and then it does more medieval combat and changes the rules and has terrain and stuff. And really fun game. Loved playing it. And so I got a lot into that. And of course, as you can tell, most of the stuff would be war games, but board games. Not so much with minis. And here in Wargaming Recon, we talk a lot now about miniatures games, about historical games, about miniatures and historical war games, as opposed to just board games or video games and that kind of stuff. And all along this period, I should point out that I had been playing video games. I started playing video games as a really young kid with the Atari 2600 and 5700, I think I got the model numbers right, but early Atari systems and then the original Nintendo Entertainment System just along the way. So I was doing all of that kind of stuff, and I suppose you can say video games are a type of war game. I'm not going to get into that. Really want to focus more on the other kind of stuff. The stuff that I think more of us could agree are war games or our miniatures games, that sort of stuff. But the big break for me happened in 2010. And the reason it was a big break was that in 2010, I graduated high school. So for graduation, I happened to get a lot of gifts, and a lot of the gifts were money. And throughout my sophomore and junior and senior years in high school, I started hanging out with this really great guy who, his name is Jesse, and he one day was in the library looking on the computers and on the web, and this was in the early days when you had to know what a website address was to get to it, where kids were going to a White House website and typing in what they thought it was to do a school report, and it turned out it wasn't the one for the White House, it was something else. This was definitely before search engines. So I was really intrigued by what he was looking at because they were painted models and they had things like rats and lizards and orc-looking things and just like all sorts of cool stuff and guys in armor and everything. And I was like, oh, I don't know what this is, but it really looks interesting. And so I started talking to him about it more and more. And then I asked him what the website was because, like I said, it was before search engines. You couldn't just hop on the web and go to Ask Jeeves or Google or Yahoo or any of those and say, I want to look for whatever, and then have it give it to you. That wasn't possible. And I realize I'm dating myself for some younger listeners of the show, but it's true. This was what life was like in America for us at the time, who had access to computers. And I had a computer at home, and eventually we got internet with America Online and stuff. We had a dial-up with your 28800 modem and all that stuff. But you had to, like, more or less know what you were looking for and how to get there. So I quizzed him, kind of. And in time, more and more, we talked about it and hung out with him and got to go to his place and see the stuff. And he was telling me about a thing called Warhammer. And it turned out he was talking about something called Warhammer Fantasy. And I was like, that's kind of cool. And there's elves and things. And I like what you've done. And you're really talented. But what are these things that are, like, fully encased in armor and have the helmets and stuff and looks like aliens? That looks really cool. And it turned out that was Warhammer 40K. So with money I had received for my high school graduation, I put it all together, and I had maybe a few hundred bucks. And I was like, I know what I'm going to do. And I told my parents that I wanted to go buy some miniatures, and they had no idea what the heck I was talking about, because you have to realize, my parents were never into any of this kind of stuff. Not when they were younger. And it must have been hard for them to have a kid. I'm an only child, for them to have a kid who is into all this kind of stuff that they know nothing about. So everything I would discover and kind of be curious about and get into and want to try, they had to learn about too. And they were clueless at first. So they were like, you want to do what? Not exactly encouraging with it. But lo and behold, I saved up and took the money and went to a comic book store, New England Comics in Quincy, Massachusetts, because I knew that they had stuff, and they actually had some of it on sale. It turned out they were getting rid of stuff because it wasn't selling. So I bought my very first miniature war game stuff. I picked up the Warhammer 40K rulebook, which this was way back in third edition. I've got an Ultramarines Command Squad and some other Space Marines kind of stuff. So I went with Space Marines because I had heard Space Marines were the easiest to deal with and to paint. I actually bought like a painting starter set where, unbeknown to me at the time, the models were all assembled except for one or two arms total for like three or four guys. So I thought everything was assembled and that life would just be easy and I could paint them if I wanted, not if I didn't have to, and just start playing, because that's how my experience was with board games. You just open up the box and you can start using it. Well, woe came on to me when I realized that wasn't the case, and I discovered I had to get more stuff. I had to get things like glue and clippers and modeling knives and just all this stuff. And I would spend tons of time on the Games Workshop website, on their hobby sections, and reading articles, and then subscribing to White Dwarf magazine and reading anything I could in there. And then they would send out something called the GW Webway, I believe it was called, newsletter. You'd get that in the mail, and they would put stuff in email, and just, I would try to absorb as much of this as possible to learn what I needed to do to actually do anything with this stuff. Because you open a box, and you get a pile of stuff on a sprue or whatever, but you have to take that, and before you can use it to play, you need to do something. You can't just be like, hey, here we go, put it on the table, find a buddy, and get going. There's a whole nother side to it. And of course, I know all of you know this, and I know this now too, but someone who's getting into all of this doesn't, and clearly I didn't at the time. And I was much younger then. I was 18 at the time, so I was a kid, really. And I just had to learn along the way. So I got my start with miniatures war games, with the Space Marines and Ultramarines, and with Tau and the Necrons, using second edition codices for things like Catechins. And I didn't necessarily play all this stuff, but I was interested in it. I would buy all the codices because I thought, oh, this is the game and this is what you use forever. So clearly I want to get them all because this way I can know what my opponents are doing. And what if someday I want to get the stuff for whatever army and play it and do cool stuff? So I got all the Eldar codices and just all that. And then I was like, this is really cool, but maybe I want to do something a little different. So I tried taking the Space Marines rather codex and modifying it for myself for a homebrew chapter, because I had read in some White Dwarf battle report, I think, that someone had done that. And I was like, what would be a cool chapter name? Well, how about Dracon? Dracon. That sounds really cool. Wait, no, I don't like that. How about we're going to call them, I like the color blue, but we should do something different. And dragons are kind of cool. And D&D, for my friends, they are really cool. Dragons are metallic colors. What's a cool metal? Ooh, how about this name, Chromium? So also at the same time, I was getting more and more into creating websites and hard-coding things in HTML, Angel Fire, GeoCity websites, all that sort of stuff. So I created a website for what I was doing and everything. And from there, I was like, well, let's move on. And then I created a message board, which was hugely popular. Over 900 people had signed up for the message board, which was awesome. It took a long time and a lot of work. And meanwhile, I kept on playing 40K. I started playing Battlefleet Gothic. I had an Imperium fleet and a Tau fleet when they came out. I was really excited when the Tau came out and played that in Eastern Mass over at Danger Planet in Waltham, Massachusetts. It's no longer there, but great store, and learned more and more about it. And I also started getting into Warhammer Fantasy finally, because that guy, Jesse, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, he was really into it. And so he and I would go all the way down to North Dartmouth, Massachusetts. By this point, when I was doing fantasy, I was in college. So I was doing this and going down to North Dartmouth. I'd get out of class early, or there was a day I didn't have class at all. We would go down really early and get a bite to eat and then play in a league and just start playing and hanging out and kind of getting into this. And I got introduced at the time to The Hobbit and Tolkien and just all this kind of nerd geekdom stuff that's really popular nowadays in the US and I'm sure elsewhere, but stuff that was unknown to me. Like, someone finally opened my eyes to what all this cool stuff was. So I got into 5th edition Warhammer Fantasy. I played with the Revenant Hordes rules, which I loved. Revenant Hordes was really interesting for those who don't know, because the GW people, Games Workshop, they had this game, Warhammer Fantasy, which they started with way, way back in the day. And they had an edition, 5th edition, but they wanted to update it to 6th edition. And they didn't want to mess over everyone who had lots of stuff for 5th edition. So they created something called Revenant Hordes to kind of wean you up and update your stuff a little bit at a time, which would ultimately fully get upgraded to 6th edition. So I was really into using my Warriors of Chaos at the time down at Grandmaster Games. And I loved it. I loved Revenant Hordes, and it was great. But by the time 6th edition came, I kind of moved away, but I had stuff. I was collecting vampire counts and the tomb lords of Khemri and the Empire and the dwarfs. Just really drawn to all of those and the imagery. And one thing that listener Andrew, who is the cause of this whole episode, had talked about was that he kind of moved away from all of that because of different things. And I had really noticed that something about the GW games I didn't like so much. And at the time, it was hard for me to put into words and really to fully form a thought about it, because I was just like, this is cool and I'm new to it, so I'm just going to go along and see how it is and play games and do what the other kids are doing. But one thing that I didn't really like, and took me until some time after to realize, was that people were doing things like min-maxing, where all these games at the time, they had army lists and points were attributed to certain things. So they would take stuff to really maximize what they could do, things that would be really cheesy or power gaming, things that now I would refer to as a tourney mindset, which is a reason why I don't look very favorably on tourney focused games. It's not the type of game for me. And some people love it, and that's great. And other people don't, like myself, and that's good too. There's different types of games for everyone. It just happened to be that I was playing games that were really heavily focused on tourneys, and I didn't play in the tournaments. I did run a BFG tourney once, but I didn't play in any tourneys, and I decided I didn't like that. I like the leagues mainly because of the camaraderie and getting to know people, and just hanging out with people was really one of the things I loved the most. Even back then, I would start to paint stuff, but I never really got into painting. I didn't really like the modeling so much, but something in me liked making terrain. It seemed doable, something more accessible to me. And I still enjoy the whole terrain making aspect more than the other parts, except playing games I love the most more so than the other like hobby-ish sides of building and painting and gluing, all that sort of stuff. Just the amount of glue that I've had stuck to my fingers, if my fingers getting stuck to each other, or zip kicker to use to accelerate, which, according to the can, causes cancer in the state of California in the U.S., but no other state, which is really weird. And just kind of a tangent, but a joke that my friends and I would always make, oh, be careful with the zip kicker. Good thing we're not in California, because it doesn't cause cancer here, only there. Anyway, so I was doing all that kind of stuff. And then at the same time, I started to slowly drift away from it. And I didn't want to completely move away because my friends were still into it. I started hanging out with this really cool guy, Steve. And Steve was a friend of a friend from college. We all went to the same college. I had transitioned and transferred from the school I originally went to the school I ended up graduating from, also the school, consequently, where I met my wife. So this buddy, Steve, was a friend of another buddy and got introduced because kind of into all this sort of stuff. And then Steve and I just started hanging out a lot and would play more 40K at that point with them at this cool new store called Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington, Massachusetts, which is on the southern shore of Massachusetts. And just started hanging out there and playing all sorts of stuff with that. And not so much the Warhammer Fantasy anymore. So that went away. And by this point, Battlefleet Gothic, produced by Games Workshop, but under the Specialist Games brand, just wasn't popular anymore, or they just stopped supporting it. I can't really explain why, but it ceased to exist, more or less. So I had this stuff, but just I stopped playing. And actually, by now, I've forgotten how to play. I probably couldn't play unless someone gave me a reminder, the same for 40K and the same for Fantasy. So I started doing more of the 40K. And then, like I said, I moved away from the GW stuff because there was a new game that was coming out. One that was being pushed by the Crowded Danger Planet, partly because the owner of Danger Planet at the time ended up working with as a consultant, and I think for, and then became a consultant for something else afterwards, but for the company Mongoose Publishing. Mongoose Publishing is probably best known for a bunch of its role-playing game products. It, in particular, just Conan the Barbarian is the one that comes to mind. But Starship Troopers is based off of the original book by Mr. Heinlein, and then the first movie by Paul Verhoeven, which is a great movie. If you haven't seen it, see it. But keep in mind, it's a parody. It's a satire. It's doing what it does on purpose. And it's different from the book. So if you're expecting something to be exactly like the book, you will be disappointed. Otherwise, brilliant in its own way. So I liked the movie, and I thought, hey, I should read the book. And I read the book and then started playing the Starship Troopers game and then became part of their demo team. So did Steve. And we got lots of stuff, and we would do demos and help to set up a tourney that was between the folks at Danger Planting and the folks at Battleground, who was played down at Battleground, was really cool. It was doing all this sort of stuff and made connections with people. It was a lot of fun. And eventually, Starship Troopers crashed and burned. And throughout all this time, I learned more things. Things like, I shouldn't really get attached to a game because it's not going to last long. That the game market is it's volatile, is what it is. And it's hard for anyone to succeed, especially for any length of time, that not everyone's like Games Workshop. And there are, gasp, other models out there. The whole Games Workshop, everything's all-inclusive. Everything you need has that Games Workshop stamp and logo and name on it, from glue and modeling knives all the way up to the models on the terrain and everything. And like, a lot of that was just starting to really be pushed at that point that I was playing. But a lot of things weren't like that. Starship Troopers, you had to use other stuff. And I thought, oh, good thing I have my GW glue and my GW this and my zip kicker that or whatever. But most games weren't like that. And when I moved away from Starship Troopers, I thought, I don't think I really want to deal with this whole assemble and paint thing anymore. I have mountains of lead and plastic just sitting in unopened boxes and that sort of stuff. There has to be something else I can do. So I got into things like Heroclix and Star Wars Minis, because that was all pre-painted and didn't require any assembly. So it was great. Of course, collectible miniature game. You don't know what you're getting. You're paying a lot of money. $15 for a booster of 5 little models. It's a lot of money. And then I ended up getting into War at Sea. So at this point, I was like, this is really cool. And I joined an internet message board called the Axis and Allies Forum Mini. And big discussions happened there on, is War at Sea a historical game? Or is it like a beer and pretzel game? And I would stupidly get into discussions and debates about this. And still to this day, I believe it tries to be a historical game to a point, but its strength is that it's a beer and pretzel game. Don't make it into something that it's not. It is what it is. And that's fantastic, because it can serve as a gateway to get into something else. And that's what it did for me. It served as a gateway to go from my past with board games, with fantasy and sci-fi games, and then move into the future of historicals. So this all ties back into that guest appearance I did on Stone Ape episode number 19. Because on there, the host, Tom Barbalay, had been into historicals for a long time. And we talked about historical computer games like Close Combat, which is a great game. Try to find them if you can. And then he started talking about something called Black Powder. I was like, what is this Black Powder of which you speak? This sounds really cool. And the more he talked about it, the more he and I emailed back and forth and chatted online, the more I thought, you know, I bet I could do that, because really, Black Powder just sounds like you're doing something that really happened and doing it with models. And I did that with fake stuff that didn't happen but could have in my imagination with like 40K and fantasy and all that sort of stuff. So why couldn't I? I could, right? And it probably wouldn't cost a lot of money for me to do it. And let me do more research, because that's what I do. I look into stuff and then try it and see how it goes. So also at the time, after I had been on Tom's show, he and I talked and we said, do you want to do a show together? Because I was doing podcasting. I started podcasting in 2006, and then I ended up stopping and starting and stopping a couple times. But in 2010, I wasn't podcasting. And Tom's like, you should podcast again. You were good. And he's like, I bet if you podcast and you work at it, you could easily get a couple thousand people to listen to you. And he's like, do you know what? I believe in you so much, I'll even guest host on you. So he was a co-host for me for a while. He has, as I had said later on in another older episode, he's moved on and he's doing other projects on his own. But he was a co-host for a while. So he and I would talk more and more. And he's like, I have a connection with this guy who should come on the show. We should do a thing with him. His name's Henry Hyde, and he's an editor of a magazine. It's called Battle Games Magazine. We should get him on. And I said, okay, if you know him, go ahead. So he made introductions, and that's how I met Henry Hyde. And Henry was on the show and just really nice. You could tell Henry knew so much about historicals and I knew nothing. And whenever I don't know anything, I want to know what I don't know. And I want to learn more and I want to do the research. So that means finding veritable, good, qualified sources. And I work in a library and I have for a long time. My go-to is go to a library. A lot of public libraries don't have wargaming stuff, especially not the kind of stuff I was looking for research and help. And I could have looked online, but I didn't really know where to begin. So I bought the Black Powder rulebook and I read through it. I was like, okay, so that's how you play. But I'm confused because, like, what stuff do I use? It doesn't talk about where to buy the models or the paint or any of that. It's like, what do I use? What do I do? And I was stopped before I even began. I had no idea what to do. I was so confused. I was like, maybe I should just not do this. But I spent a lot of money for the book and I should try to do something, and it sounds cool, and I want to try, but what the heck do I do? So I had the brilliant idea, God bless them, really, I had the brilliant idea of emailing Henry Hyde, because I was like, well, Henry knows what he's talking about, so why don't I just get in touch with him and see what he has to say? And I was like, well, I'll give it a go, and he'll help me, because Henry seems like a really nice guy, and why wouldn't he help me? Because that's what nice people do. Nice people help other people. So I actually have here the email I sent him, and I'm laughing because for a long time, I've referenced this on the show, and I've referenced it with other people, and even in communications since that day with Henry, I'm like, remember when I sent you that email? And we're just going to laugh because it's so absurd. So for the first time since, well, first time maybe ever, I'm going to read the email that I sent him and his reply. I'm sure he wouldn't mind. I haven't asked him, which is normally before I read someone's reply, unless it's clear that their message to me is going to be public, I don't, or I get their permission first. But I'm sure he won't mind, at least if I paraphrase it. So I sent him this email back in 2011. It's great. Hi, Henry. I'm thinking about getting into Warlord Games' Black Powder Rules. Order the rulebook tonight. Tom and I spoke about it, and he recommended the Perry Brothers for models. The guys who play locally are doing American War of Independence. Can you recommend any manufacturers for AWI, that's American War of Independence, that would be especially useful for a reluctant painter assembler? Me. One of the guys is doing British and the other Americans. I know I don't want to do British because I can't paint well, and all that white and red scares me. I've been thinking about the Americans, but know there are other options out there, Hessians, Indians, etc. My hope is to pick an interesting army that won't get slaughtered on the tabletop and is both easy to assemble and paint. Plus, wargaming tends to be costly, and it'd be nice to keep the expenses down. Is this an impossible combination? After mulling it over for a while, I thought you would be a great person to ask, based on the experience you have playing historical wargames and the exposure you have as editor of Battle Games. Plus, you know Priestley, that's Rick Priestley, and some of the fellows involved. At least Tom told me you do. Thanks, Jonathan. So, at the time, clearly, I thought nothing of doing something like this. And nowadays, I'd be like, what the heck were you thinking, younger me? What kind of questions are those? And what kind of place are you putting a person in? Because that's a whole kitchen sink and then some. So, Henry, to his credit, he spent a couple days thinking about this. A busy guy. So he says, in a very, very nice reply, Hi, Jonathan. Sheesh, how long is a piece of string? I should charge you for a question like that. And he really should. He didn't, but he should have. Okay, from what you're saying, I assume you mean 28 millimeter. The Perrys are by far and away the best range and the most extensive. Their range is, at the moment, all metal, so no assembly required. They carry a lot of detail and are not cheap. If you want, quote, old school and less costly, but in a slightly smaller scale, then look at miniature figurines, minifigs. They are 25 millimeters, slightly, quote, stiff, but nice, clean castings and considerably less expensive. There's a Minifigs USA as well as a, quote, mother UK version. He then goes on to proceed to outline, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 different manufacturers of models, complete with links, his thoughts on them, and then he moves in to some really cool stuff that I'm going to highlight. He says, quote, and if you really want to save money by going 20 millimeter plastic instead of 28 millimeter metal, there are, of course, Revell, Airfix, Italiari, IMEX, and others selling boxes via toy shops and hobby shops. He gave a link to the PlasticSoldierReview.com website, which I have to say I'm loving now for my stuff with Hail Caesar, which I'll be doing eventually as soon as Hat finishes stocking all the stuff I need. And he's right, 20 millimeter was great. Of course, at the time that I got this, I was like, I don't know anything about any of these people or any of the companies, so I'm just going by what you said was great, which is the Perrys. And then it turned out I didn't like doing 28 mils, even though all my previous experience with GW was 28 mil, which is really closer to 35. Anyway, he says, finally, if you're not keen on complicated painting, definitely go American and produce an army based mostly on militia with a few continental regiments thrown in. Many militiamen wore whatever they liked, so nobody can criticize your painting. Avoid Hessians, really complex uniforms, and mitre helmets, including some with pinstriped trousers. Eek! And they were, of course, mercenaries in the British Army, not really a separate force. The only other truly separate army were the French, way up north or way, way down south. If you fancy some quirky campaigns in lots of white uniforms, then of course they are an option. The fact of the matter is that the British won almost all of the battles, but the Americans, with French help, won the war. So if you're going to be remotely historical, then you just have to suck that up. If you want an inspiration, check out Giles Allison's painting blog. He gave a link. He said he collects for the British Grenadier Rolls, so his units are very small. And then Henry had an online album of his huge Long Island game from a couple years ago. And he goes, okay, best wishes. And again, just tons of credit to Henry, not only for taking the time to read my email and to think you're off your rocker, but I'm going to be nice anyway and send you an email. And then not just, you should do some research online yourself, but here's my thoughts. Just a complete and total stand-up guy. True gentleman. And that was, as much as I appreciated what he had done on the show when he came on, I guess, that very first time ages ago and thought he was nice and everything, it didn't really truly sink in how big of a gentleman he was and continues to be to this day until I got that email from him. And looking at it now is just, it's pretty amazing. I had, of course, replied and just kind of talked a little bit more about some stuff and got a wonderful reply from him that said basically that he was glad to have been of help. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of me considering Henry just a great guy and someone for me to talk to. And I am deeply honored that he still takes my emails to this day and messages on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, and that he pretends to know who I am. No, he really doesn't. Henry's fantastic, but he's amazing, is what it is. And if you can't figure out that I just adore the guy and that he's incredible, and many other people do, he is, and this is your proof. And Henry is why I wargame with historicals, because if it wasn't for Henry, I would have given up, which means I probably would have given up the show Wargaming Recon, which means at the time it was a different name, so never would have even got the name Wargaming Recon. I wouldn't be recording this, wouldn't have gotten Andrew's message on Facebook, would have shut it all down, and I don't know, I'd be spending my time spending money not on little toy soldiers and going to cool conventions and all that kind of stuff. I'd probably be spending it on, I don't know, something stupid is what I would probably be doing. So Henry is the reason for everything. And without him, there is no anything else. That's it. Game's over. Time to go home. So that is how I became a wargamer and got into everything. Briefly, it started with me doing board games and doing war games that are board games. You can tell I'm getting punchy. Sorry. And then sci-fi fantasy miniatures games, and then transitioning into historical collectible minis, and then finally historical miniature war games. I've talked about the rest of the stuff in other episodes and reverse interviews and appearances on other shows and past episodes of Wargaming Recon. But basically, since that date, I haven't looked back. I've loved doing historicals. I continue to use Black Powder. There's a great group of guys who game with me. In particular, Court and Adrian have been around from the beginning that I started doing historicals, and they put up with me. And that was important. Finding people who you at least can put up with, who you can game with, and hopefully that you like, so that you can have a good time with. And I think we have a lot of fun. And that's what this is all about for me, with everything. And this is probably why my favorite part of podcasting isn't talking into the microphone. It's hearing from all of you. It's that sense of community and of belonging and people who you can tolerate and who you can have fun gaming with. It's spending time with incredible people. That's what makes this all important. And without that, there's nothing. There are a lot of things that you can do to have fun. You can do solo wargaming and all that sort of stuff. But even then, I would say you want to have some human contact of some type at some point, even if it's just emailing off what you did in your campaign to someone, or in the prior days before email, writing a letter saying, hey, this is what I did. What do you think? Does that sound cool or what? You can have some of that, I think, at minimum. And for me, I like all this. I thrive on it. I'm an introvert. Really, I am. It doesn't seem like it, but that's because I'm here and I'm speaking into the microphone and all of you are somewhere else. And I put on a brave face when I go to conventions, and I really just want to hide inside myself. As much as I love, and I really do love interacting with all of you, I'm an introvert, so it's hard for me to come out of my bubble. But once I do, and once I feel really comfortable, you won't get me to shut up, is really what it comes down to. But it's that community. community is important, the sense of belonging, and feeling that you're not being judged and that there are other people who are doing what you like to do and that it's okay and that it's good. And I feel like I'm doing an after-school special, which maybe makes it a topic for another episode of the show. I should write that down. So that's how it is. And I've been doing Black Powder and Muskets and Tomahawks now and Hail Caesar and Sales of Glory is going to be a new thing. And I mean, just all this other kind of stuff. And I'm still new to this. And I think that is one of the things that makes the show interesting for maybe some of you. That if you've been doing this for a long time, and if you are a grognard, and you've been doing it since the Dark Ages, when you were playing roles that were cranked out on a mimeograph machine, or if you're newer, you like seeing what I'm going through, because maybe you're going through it too, but if you're looking back, you're remembering, hopefully fondly, of when you first got into all of this, and having that freshness, and the new set of eyes, and the new experience, and hopefully I'm breathing a little bit of enthusiasm into it for all of you, because I am enthusiastic about it. It's a lot of fun, and it's amazing, and there's so much out there, and there's always something new to try and something new to do. So that's what it is. So Andrew, I hope I answered your question, and really I probably could have done another whole episode, like a part 2 hour on this. I'm not, don't worry. But Andrew, let me know if I didn't answer your question, but this is how Jonathan became a war gamer. It's a long tale, and I shortened a lot of it because I don't want to bore you guys is what it is. I mean, it might be interesting to me. I could talk about the first time I saw a Warhammer Fantasy tournament, or my tactics for this or that, or all sorts of stuff, or different message boards I used and everything, or the importance of the internet in my wargaming career. Hugely important, I might say. But again, stuff for another show, or maybe never, I don't know. Maybe it's something you'll get to hear if you corner me in a convention or out and about, and you say, hey, you're Jonathan, and I'd be like, yes, I am, and you'll be like, I listen to your show, Wargaming Recon, and I would thank you, and then you say, so you said there were other things about how you became a wargamer that you didn't cover in the show, so what are they? And then I would tell you, preferably over a pint or two, I guess. So that is the story of how I became a wargamer. It goes back to when I was a tiny, tiny child and moves all the way up to now. So thank you again, Andrew. That's just not just me being like, thank you. This was a lot of fun going down memory lane. It's something I hadn't done and hadn't thought about in a long time. So this just goes to prove that should you decide, any of you, to go ahead and send some feedback, you never know what's going to happen. Which is a great segue to the next segment of the show. It's kind of is great because it just bookends the show. So here's mailbag. Like I said earlier, I like to have a mailbag segment where I talk about and share feedback from all of you, whether it's emailed or on our voicemail line or Facebook or wherever. So this happens to be, and I really didn't plan that there would be this connection. I promise, I really didn't. But this is a shout out from Henry Hyde. So Henry posted on our Facebook page. He says, quote, thanks for the t-shirt, Jonathan. Here's hoping you have a great podcasting year. Well, thank you, Henry. And the shirt Henry's talking about, I don't want to use the royal we. I don't really talk about this on the show. It's just kind of something that I do because I don't want to make a thing out of it. But one of the things I try to do is whenever someone is a guest of the show, I try to send them a t-shirt that has a show's logo and name and all that kind of stuff on it, just as a thank you for them coming on. And I usually ask them to have a photo taken of them wearing it, preferably with something that they love, something that shows who they are. Hopefully gamey, but whatever. And then they send it to me and it might end up on the blog or in the show notes or wherever. So I sent Henry a t-shirt. Just so appreciative for all the times that Henry has come on the show and all his encouragement. And then, of course, that email in the beginning that he actually responded to it. It was like, you crazy loon, leave me alone. So he's just thanking me for that. Henry, I can't thank you enough for everything. That's the truth. So that is the mailbag segment. If you have thoughts, feedback, comments, constructive criticism, rather, that you want to send, please do. You can find all the ways that you can get in touch with us through social media and email and all that just by heading to our show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR111. And that'll have everything in there. Facebook is a great method, wargamingforums.com/ Facebook, I think it is, or /FB, because you can, we post stuff up on there all the time. Usually pictures. I talk about things that are coming up, but it's also cool because we can have conversations with you. And we do often. People say, post a comment, and then I'll get a chance to reply, or they might share something. It's just a cool way to connect. Of course, there's email, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, and we're on Pinterest and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But really, email and Facebook are the two big ones, or you can leave a comment on the show notes. That's another great one. But those are the main ways to get in touch with us. And we have that that voicemail line, which I don't really push as much as I should. And consequently, I would say because I don't push it that much, it doesn't really get used. But hey, why the heck not? So you can give us a call. We have this really cool way that you can just go ahead and call us and leave a voicemail. It just uses your phone. It's not a 1-800 number or any of that, so it's not toll-free, which I apologize for. But we're a small operation, don't really have the funds for such a thing, for people to be calling and all that kind of stuff. So it means if you're in the continental United States, you probably have a free long distance plan, or you might even, if you're overseas, I'm not honestly positive about how all that kind of stuff works. So it's less likely, I would say, if you're overseas, that you would be getting in touch with us via telephone. On Facebook and email is probably the best. But if not, we do have that phone line that you can go ahead and use. The number is 347-470-4263, 347-470-GAME, and then that allow you to just say what your feedback is. Now, I also want to, before I completely wind down this episode, I want to say, and I've been pushing this for a little while, but it's really important. I want to say that there's something new here for the 2014 podcasting year for us here at Wargaming Recon, and that is that we have an episode guide. In the past, I would think about what I was going to do in advance, but I wouldn't share it with anyone, so there was no real way for any of you to know what was coming up before it happened. You just kind of had to wait and think, okay, what's going to happen this week? And I suppose the suspense is kind of cool. You can be like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be like. But you might want to know in advance, because not every topic is going to be of equal interest to everyone, and I understand that. Or you might not have time for everything at any given time. So I've created this episode guide, and what it does is it shows what is going to be coming out up ahead. It shows when you can expect an episode. It shows when they should be released. And then it also has the episode numbers, which is cool. But most importantly, it has either like a topic or a title of the show, or even if there's going to be any guests in it. So, for example, we've been doing this for a few episodes. There's episode 106, which was the very first episode of 2014. And for the episode plan, it says January 20th, episode 106, goals and plans for 2014. And then a cool thing about the episode plan is that I have stuff that's coming up in the future, which I'm going to go over in a minute. But then after an episode releases, you can still go to the episode plan, and then the title turns red, and you can click on it because it's a hyperlink, and that'll take you to the show notes of the episode, just to make your life a little easier. So for example, this is episode 111. This came out on March 30th, 2014, and it's titled How Jonathan Became a Wargamer. Well, on April 14th, episode 112 will come out. HuzzaCon 2014 with guest Dean Emerson, MHWA member and a con organizer. If you're a longtime listener and you've heard me talk about the episode plan in previous episodes, you're thinking, wait a sec, Dean and Hazar were supposed to be episode 111, and Jonathan being a wargamer was supposed to be episode 112, and that's true, which is a downside of the episode plan, but sometimes things have to get moved around for different reasons, and it just so happened to be that Dean was sick when we were supposed to record episode 111, so I did a solo episode. But it's cool because you can still go to the episode plan and see where it got moved to. So then for April 28th, it's planned. And of course, all of this is subject to change as needs arise. But episode 28th, April 28th, rather, of 2014, is when episode 113 comes out. Are painted minis essential to miniatures wargaming? And I bet I'm going to get some feedback on that. I just can tell. And then on May 12th, is when episode 114 comes out. Wargamers Survival Guide to Kickstarter. And it's called Survival Guide, but that's mainly because I'm trying to tease people into giving feedback and comments. But really, I'm going to highlight some of the areas to look out for and concerns with Kickstarter. And Kickstarter is becoming more and more popular, especially for gaming companies, and just something to cover. And then That's what's on the plan, except for at the end of the podcasting season, there's going to be the usual holiday gift guide for 2014, this time in episode 127, coming out on November 10th, 2014. And then December 8th of 2014 is when episode 129 comes out, looking back on 2014. So there's going to be 23 new episodes planned for 2014. And then I'm going to be doing something brand new. I'm used to, over the past few podcast seasons, of taking a break for most of December and part of January, because it's my birthday and Christmas and things like that in December, and it just gives me time to rejuvenate. And in the past, it's been dead air, which is deadly for a podcast. Never want to have an empty feed, especially when listeners like all of you are used to a certain podcast release schedule. So I have something special planned. There will be two best of episodes released after the season ends. On December 22nd, which is my birthday, there will be one best of episode. And then on January 5th, 2015 is when another best of episode will come out. And then the 2015 podcast season begins on January 19th with episode 130. It's all a mouthful, I know, don't worry. Short version is, go to the episode guide, the episode plan, and that has all that you need to know. And of course, there's a link to that in the show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR111. And then lastly, iTunes is the most popular way for anybody to find a podcast. It's what it is. Their podcast directory is huge, and people go there first. Oddly enough, despite us being on the air since 2006, we don't have any ratings on iTunes. And I know there are quite a few of you who like it, partly because you keep on listening, and I can tell because I look at the download numbers. So I know people are listening, and if you didn't like the show, you wouldn't listen anymore. So I'm hoping that I can encourage those of you who use iTunes to listen to the show to give us a rating on iTunes. Give us whatever your honest rating is. If you think we deserve 5 stars, great! Big hugs all around. If you think we deserve 2, okay. You're being honest, that's commendable. Just put it up there, give us a rating, and if you want to give a bit of review, that's great too. And the reason why I'm really pushing this is that if you give us a rating, if you like what we do, if you love what happens here, and if you subscribe on iTunes and all that kind of stuff, you give us that rating, that will encourage other potential listeners to give us a shot, because people will peruse on the iTunes directory and see us pop up, and right now they'll say, hey, there's no ratings, I'm not going to bother with them. They must not be good, even though they have all this content. But if they see your ratings, they're going to say, oh, people listen, people like it, we'll give it a rating. And then, of course, a cool thing that you can do with iTunes is that you can subscribe to the show. And this is the huge benefit of the podcast format, as opposed to just, say, like regular internet radio or anything else. And it's that when you subscribe, you automatically get new content. So as long as you listen to the show and continue to listen to new episodes through iTunes, iTunes will keep on sending you that new content. And if it happens to stall, you can say, hey, I want to keep on getting it. And then you can make it resume that. So you want to subscribe in iTunes. Again, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But if you want to skip the show notes and just go ahead and give us that rating right away, which, thank you, head on over to wargamingforums.com/iTunes. So that's it. That's the whole deal. I've talked a long time right now. And just thank you, as always, for inviting me into your homes and your lives to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Thank you to all of you for your feedback and constructive criticism, because who knows, something that you write in might just someday end up causing me to create a whole episode about it, or part of an episode. And that's how episode 111, this episode, came to be, because of listener feedback. Very, very important. So thank you again, you guys, you ladies, you girls, you men and women, you everybody, you gamers, you war gamers, you people, you know the drill, you know what's about to happen. No matter what's going on in your lives, no matter what has you happy or sad or whatever, you need to keep on gaming. Crossroad Games in Standish, Maine is holding a 32-hour long charity board game marathon on Saturday, April 5th, 2014, lasting into Sunday, April 6th, 2014. All money raised will benefit childsplaycharity.org. Each participant needs to raise at least $100 to participate. This is supposed to be collected from friends and coworkers. Childsplaycharity.org, quote, seeks to improve the lives of children in hospitals around the world through the kindness and generosity of the video game industry and the power of play. All of the money is going to childsplaycharity.org. Players will get t-shirts and swag for participating, as well as playing a ton of board games. Crossroad Games is putting together the demo list, and they are considering having a game design seminar at the marathon. If you can't participate, please spread the word about this important charity. Hospitals around the world benefit from funds raised through childsplaycharity.org. Email info@crossroadgames.com for further information. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Change. We can dream of sometime when these walls these wars we fight will end, my friend. But until then...